This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Yeah, Frank here, he's got his own billiard room.
Yes, it's the...
billiard room.
Come on already. We call it the...
The Place to Be.
Yes, the Place to Be. The Place to Be.
Then I shall be there.
Now, it's time. Live and in living color.
The Grandy Man can.
Time to play the game!
No, you left me satisfied and smiling. So.
That's what she said!
Why do I want this? I want to make bank, bro. I want to get ass. I want to drive a Range Rover.
Place to Be Nation, Scott Criscola and Justin Rosero. This is the Place to Be Podcast.
Very nice, Mr. Criscola.
Oh, I'm sorry, Dennis.
Japanese band Oral Vampire produced a song called The Repo Man and used footage.
Oral Vampire, huh?
Or Aural. A-U-R-A-L. What kind of show is this?
Sounds like some Twilight porn in Michael Lynch's collection there.
Cosmonauts star in American Pie, of course. There's a lacrosse player. Bismarck. No, was it? No, Bismarck wasn't it?
Bismarck.
No, who's the other guy I'm getting confused with?
Bismarck. Yeah, he dressed as North Dakota.
There's only one place where the big boys play, and that is in my extra queen-size bed. Well, it just happens. What can you do?
Let's talk the things.
I think they might hit shock wall.
Is that the Shockmaster's wall?
Yeah, I like Big Dick myself. I'm just curious. PTB Nation, let me know what you're
doing. Our opener.
To do worse than Josh Richard.
All right, I thank you very much, Vince McMahon. I've got to pose some of the questions to you, Ultimate Warrior, that Vince just discussed with the World Wrestling Federation champion, Hulk Hogan. First of all, what happened tonight? Ultimate Warrior.
What happened tonight was already written, Hulk Hogan. It was written a long time ago when the warriors that came before me and you, yes, I'll do it. Now what we must do is beyond us, Hulk Hogan. I stood with my back to you, Hulk Hogan, and I knew you would not come. But Hulk Hogan, when I looked into your eyes, I saw walls filled with fear. Fear that ran thick through you, Hulk Hogan, at Royal Rumble. I needed no friends. I needed no partners. Every man stands by himself like the Ultimate Warrior always has. But Hulk Hogan, you still do not understand. You still have mistrust. I need not your protection, Hulk Hogan. Look on the wall of the Joe Louis Arena. The warriors that could not come have attached themselves to the outer structure, Hulk Hogan. They're seeping through, dealing me, beating me with the power to survive. They ride on my back for my protection. I need not you, Hulk Hogan. And if you look closer, you will notice red and yellow, the colors of Hulkamania. Hulkamaniacs that are questioning, do you have, Hulk Hogan, what it takes to be the most powerful force in the entire universe? Hulk Hogan, look at me, Hulk Hogan. Look at me!
Please.
Without the paint, Hulk Hogan, the desire to withstand the pain and give you the utmost in battle and combat at WrestleMania 6 still stands, Hulk Hogan, for I am the chosen one.
I get the impression that we've got a loose cannon on our hands, ladies and gentlemen, with the Ultimate Warrior. We're going to be back with James Buster Douglas right after this. Boom.
All right, Place to Be Nation, welcome back to another great episode of the one and only Place to Be Podcast. I am your co-host, Justin Rosero, coming to you live here on this Monday evening. And a little bit of mix-up on the schedule here due to some real-life events that went down in the world of wrestling last week. We'll get to that in a moment. First, though, let me bring in my PIC, Mr. Scott Criscola. Scott, how you doing?
Good evening, JR. Good evening, Place to Be Nation. Welcome to episode 305 of the Place to Be Podcast. And yes, originally we were going to open up the a big silver box called the Vintage Vault. We were going to do Backlash 2002.
No, we were supposed to do the draft.
Oh, that's right. I thought we were doing the draft on Wednesday. You're right. We were doing the draft tonight. Backlash was Wednesday. That's right. Or next week. That's right. We're supposed to do the draft tonight. But as JR mentioned, real life events have taken precedence. Little trivia for you, JR. And I don't know if I asked you this in episode 300, but do you remember the episode number of our eulogy podcast of the Macho Man Randy Savage?
The number?
Yes.
38.
Very, very good. 32.
Okay. I knew it was in the 30s.
Close. May 24th, 2011, we posted that one. And we were hoping we would never have to do, obviously, evolution of life is what it is, but tonight, of course, we switch things up because a week ago tomorrow, we lost, look, wrestlers have passed away, but for some reason, this one seems very different because it's so high profile. Of course, last Tuesday night, legally, his name was just Warrior.
Yes.
But we all know who he is, of course. He was Jim Helwig, a.k.a. The Ultimate Warrior. And he passed away last Tuesday night in Phoenix at the age of 54. And it was announced, it was released today on, I know it was on Lords of Pain. I'm pretty sure the guys at WrestleChat had it too.
Yeah, I think it was
everywhere. It was a cardiovascular disease. He died of a heart attack.
Yeah. And it was surreal. It was shocking.
Very.
I do want to divert for a second here, Scott. Mm-hmm. And we'll start off with a little levity before we get into the celebrating the man's career. So,
sure.
I wanted to just tell a little story I think you and the nation would enjoy. So
oh,
I went to this event over the weekend for Providence College.
Yes, very hoity-toity.
Yes, very hoity-toity.
You look good. Nice suit.
So John O'Hurley, do you know who he is?
I do know who he is.
He is the he was the MC of the auction. He was the auctioneer. And
because awesome.
He's a Providence grad. Mm-hmm. And he, of course, was Jay Peterman in Seinfeld, was on Dancing with the Stars, was on Family
Bunch
Feud, and doing Broadway now. So, my wife was working all day, so I pretty much had the run of the day, had my spa day. And my buddy Kevin from work, his wife works with my wife at PC. So he came down, and we went and grabbed a beer and had a couple apps. And in the gigantic sports bar, Scott, Champions, you need to see this place. There's just a million TVs. There's like a 90-inch TV on the fucking wall.
Were you like Copley Plaza, like that area? Or?
Yeah. This hotel was right in Copley Plaza. So this was, the Champions was the bar in the hotel, but it's
nice.
A gigantic sports bar.
Excellent.
So we go have a drink. So then we're heading up. It's like probably like 5 past 5, and the thing started at 6, so we're going up to get changed. And we ride in the elevator, and John O'Hurley's in the elevator with his wife, some golf clubs, so we're going up. I was like, oh, cool. So we get out, say goodbye. We go get ready. We both get dressed, get our ties on, get our jackets on, get back. Wait, and there's only 4 elevators that come to our floor, and they're all kind of slow. But it's still very weird timing, Scott. Then when we get back on the elevator, there's John O'Hurley in his tux. So, right? So... we see him coming up, and by the magic of some grace of timing, we see him coming back down. So as we're on the elevator, it's stopping at every floor, right? So I make a little joke and kind of try and crack him up a bit. So we're going down, and the last stop before his floor was like the 27th floor, and these girls get on, probably in their mid-20s, and one had a big gym bag, so we get in. And I'm trying to go through my mind what I want to say, like to break the ice, right? Because it's a kind of a tense ride, it's a packed car. And I was going to say, has anyone here ever seen Seinfeld? Like, as a joke, obviously he's in Seinfeld, he's seen Seinfeld. I was trying to think of something along those lines to say. And I'm like, well, he has his notes in his hand, he's kind of reading them over. I'm like, I'm not going to bust him up, before.
Right.
So we stop on the 4th floor, and he's getting off, and Kevin and I were going down to the lobby to go to the ATM. So we stop at the 4th floor, he goes to get off the elevator, and his foot gets caught in the gym bag of the girl, and he goes flying out of the elevator, like like a full-on stumble, like completely loses his balance, and he's like trying to catch his feet under him, and he goes like stumbling, flying out of the elevator. We're dying in the elevator, because I'm picturing the people on the outside, what they would have noticed, like seen with this guy, Jay Peterman, comes flying out of the elevator, and like he somehow keeps his balance, but he's like stumbling, when you're stumbling forward, and but he didn't fall. So the girl's mortified, right? So I'm like, you killed Peterman. And I don't think they understood what I said. So Kevin goes, do you know who that was? And they're like, no, who? He's like, have you ever seen Seinfeld? That's Jay Peterman. They're like, oh my God. They were mortified. So I'm dying. Kevin and I get off the elevator, and I'm just laughing my ass off because, you know, it's the last thing you expect is Jay Peterman to go flying off your elevator. And so we go back up. The night's great. Met Coach Cooley. He gave a great speech. And at the end of the night, Peterman was, you know, over there kind of taking pictures and shaking hands. So I go up to him. And I'm like, oh, you know, I just wanted to make sure you're okay. I was on the elevator with you. He was like, oh, it's not the darndest thing. I almost, you know, you saw my dance moves. Like, he's really, he took it well. You know, he was, like, kind of laughing it off. And so it was great. His wife took a picture of me and him, which is on Facebook. And I was very thrilled because I set him up. And Mr. Greenhouse and the rest of the Seinfeld crew at Placement Nation will appreciate this one. So I said, Mr. O'Hurley, I said, do you prefer Myanmar or Burma? And he looks at me in his J. Peterman voice, Scott Criscolo, and says, it'll always be Myanmar to me. And I popped big time. Like, it made my night that he did the line in the Peterman voice. He got the line backwards. In the show, he says, it'll always be Burma to me. But I don't know if he was doing it on purpose or, you know, whatever. It was a long night. Right. I wasn't going to complain. But it was fantastic that you know, he got the joke. He did the voice. And it completely made my night. So not only did I almost see him fly off the elevator and fall to his peril, I also got the Seinfeld quote over with him, so nice. It was a good night for me and my Seinfeld glory. And
excellent.
You know, because I get to the reception, and Megan comes up to me and she's like, oh, Hurley was late, and you know we didn't get to prep him. I go, well, you're lucky he made it. I said he almost died. I'm like, well, I don't blame him for being late. He probably had to go compose himself in the bathroom after flying out of the elevator. But that's
funny.
Vision has been etched in my brain now for the last 3 days, and I just keep laughing randomly, just picturing him going flying out of the elevator.
That is so funny.
So there you go. I just wanted to start off with that little anecdote for you.
Yes. You also got to meet or spend a little time with one of our, yours and mine, and many's favorite college basketball coach, the great Ed Cooley.
Yes. He gave an awesome speech, very inspirational. Mm-hmm. He got a standing ovation, as you would expect.
Of course.
A loud Let's Go Friars chant, and he said at the end he's never leaving, Scott, so we'll see.
Well,
he'll never leave.
Father Shanley and the rest of the crew, let's hope they agree with it over the next few years.
Yeah.
They made it big steps this year. Big steps.
Very big steps. So I wanted to get that out there. And, yes, Scott, it was 1 week ago. We were sitting here recording. We were doing our WrestleMania 30 weekend in review, and the Ultimate Warrior was on. He was on Raw.
Yes, he was. Yep.
Came out. Yep. He put on the mask, and he shook the ropes.
Overcoat.
And everything seemed hunky-dory. Warrior's back in the fold, and it was kind of cool, you know?
Yeah.
Then Tuesday night, we were chatting, all of us were chatting on Facebook. I was watching TV. I was about to wrap up the night. It was about 11:15 or so.
Yeah, it was late. Yeah,
and I see a tweet, or I see a Facebook. Someone posted on someone, like a wrestling Facebook message board, and said, Triple H just tweeted that Ultimate Warrior died. It must be a hoax or, like, hacked. So I go to Twitter quick, and I search Ultimate Warrior. And I must have saw it, like, right as it was breaking, pretty much. Mm. Because I saw the tweets come flooding in. And before I could even hope that it was a hoax, like, all the major news sites were in on it. Like, TMZ, Dave Meltzer, you know, Keller, Al, like, they were all tweeting it. I'm like, oh, God, this isn't good. If, like, they're already saying it, I don't think Meltzer would be reporting it, you know, if he thought it could be. He probably would have called it out as a hoax. So I'm like, he knows something. And sure enough, within minutes, it was confirmed. It was on the WWE's Twitter page. And I kept hoping against hope it was, you know, fake. And it just,
oh, absolutely.
I messaged you guys, and I texted, you know, our buddy Jim, who was just in shock, and I could not believe it, because it's like, what? He was just on, like, less than 24 hours ago. We just saw him all weekend. Like, the timing of everything was unbelievable. I can't think of a more, I mean, there've been big surprising, wrestlers that have passed on, like Eddie Guerrero,
right.
You know, we weren't really expecting at the time, and of course the Chris Benoit thing was, you know, mind-blowing. Brian Pillman, you know, there's been some that have really caught us off guard, but, I mean, this was just mind-numbing to me. I'm like, he literally was just on TV.
Yeah.
And it's like he was a regular earlier. And it was like he was a regular performer that was on.
Right.
Like a guy that, you know, if, whatever, knock on wood, Ryback or whatever. You know, it's like, oh, he was just on TV. Well, of course, he's on TV every week. I mean, Ultimate Warrior hadn't been on wrestling TV in, you know, 15 years. And he finally comes back home. He does the Hall of Fame Mania Raw, then dies the next day. It's fucking crazy.
Yeah, Cole had said it was his first Raw since,
yeah, June.
You say like July or what? June 28th, 1996. Something
somebody
like that.
He lost to Vader in his last match. I remember.
Right.
It was taped after they announced he was gone, and then they aired the match. Vader beat him, and it was right after King of the Ring '96. So yeah, he hadn't been on in that long, and he had been on Nitro and, you know, WCW in '98. But so since '98, he hadn't been anywhere other than,
you know, a couple of indie shots he did in that one pay-per-view match against Orlando Jordan that Jim ordered. He paid like $30 for it or whatever for one match.
Oh, yeah.
But, it was crazy. It was really mind-blowing to me. And, you know, all the speculation immediately, did he off himself? You know, did he kind of snap and go, you know, did he come home and then say, I did all this and, you know, I've had it? Did he overdose? Like, and, you know, I kind of ruled that out internally right away. Just the way he looked at his family and talked about his family, and he seemed very at peace with himself. He didn't seem like someone that was going to go, you know, kill himself the next day. But you never know. I mean, you know, we've seen weirder things. You know, the next thing that entered my mind, and I'm not sure if it crossed yours as well, was, you know, did he have a terminal illness that everyone, you know, Vince and those guys knew about, and that's why they brought him back? And, you know, he had some kind of cancer and was pretty much on his last legs and last days. But then I was like, wow, that's really weird timing if that's the case. You know,
yeah,
like,
well,
like,
yeah.
How could they have timed it so well? And, you know, and so then I just settled on, well, it was just weird fucking timing.
Had to have been.
Weird timing. And, you know, yeah. News has come out since, and, you know, you were kind of onto this early on saying, you know, maybe he knew a little bit that he was not doing well, and the time has kind of come out, you know, word has come out that, no, his, you know, he hadn't been doing great lately. And he had always feared about dying young. His father and grandfather both had heart issues around the same age as he did. And, you know, many believed he did this comeback to try and set up his family financially to make sure they were good to go. So that's why he came back and made sure he made amends now and got them locked into this deal, which was good. And it sounds like Vince and company are honoring that, taking care of him. And, you know, they send officials down to Phoenix to help with the funeral plans and everything.
Right.
And they're doing a tribute Raw here tonight, and they took it very, very seriously. And, you know, they said, you know, Vince was really shaken up over the whole thing about him passing. So what it is, I mean, it was a stark reminder of mortality, I'll tell you that much. Tuesday night, yeah. I ended up staying up till 1, pretty much reading all different tweets and everything else. I could not fall asleep, and I barely got any sleep Wednesday night. By Tuesday night, by Wednesday night, I was just exhausted. And right. we did our show here, and I was on you know, on fumes. And what do we do? Do we do WrestleMania 18? Right? I don't know how that
we did.
I was so fucking tired.
I know we were, and it was not a short. Which, by the way, episode 304. Please listen if you haven't. It is good. We're not short selling it, but yeah, we both were definitely on fumes. I mean, the weekend. I had a busy day Saturday, as did you, and then, you know, obviously Mania Sunday. We were pretty gassed at that point. So,
yep.
But yeah, I was late too. I was checking the tweets, and but I was on Facebook, and I was all over the place, and people were texting me. Is this? That's one thing I love about it. It's funny that you and I have become everybody's like true source. Like the girl, the people that live next door to me who are good friends with the doctor and his wife. There, she's runs a Girl Scout troop, so she knows me and everything. And she walked over to me the other day when I was walking over to my dumpster, throwing my garbage out. And she comes over and she goes, I got to talk to you. This is serious. And I'm like, I thought something was wrong with Mia because they had done some right. Girl Scout thing the night before. And I'm like, well, what's wrong? What happened to the Warrior? And I'm like,
you're like Bobby Heenan in the airports. Everyone's coming.
Yeah,
up
yeah. I know. You know, people like texting me, what'd you think of this? That overshadowed people asking me about Taker streak. It was Warrior dying. It was, yeah, I was... I kind of jumped. I don't want to say I jumped on it, but at first I did think, not that it was timing. Like who thinks, oh, I'm going to go in the Hall of Fame. I'm going to show up on Raw, and then tomorrow night I'm going to die. I mean, I wasn't going that far, but I was thinking. I was definitely thinking that he was, you know, let's be honest. I mean, he probably took some form of steroids in his career, so I'm sure he, you know, his heart took a beating. It's what happened to Eddie. Even when you don't take it anymore, you know, the damage is done. And you know, I think what made me think that way at first was that promo on Raw where he was talking about breathing your last breath.
That's what made everything
so creepy.
Your
last heartbeat, and you're like, what the fuck?
This is like ridiculous. That whole promo, and then
yeah,
it was really mind blowing. Like, I don't think anyone but the Ultimate Warrior could have done that. Like, come back after 15 years, make amends, have a great Hall of Fame speech. Have two great moments, be re-embraced, cut a promo about dying, and then die the next day. Well, I mean, it's fucked up, and that's why I think so many people thought it was a suicide, was because of his speech that night.
Yeah.
I think a lot of folks thought, well, that sounded like a fucking suicide note to me.
Yeah.
And now
yeah.
He's dead. So I think, you know, that's where a lot of that came from. So, you know, people were pissed about the speculation, but, I mean, I don't think it was out of the realm to go there. to look at it that way, to say, well, I mean, I think if he hadn't done that speech, no one probably would have thought that.
Right.
But with that speech, it really sounded like a guy who knew he was dying the next day. And it was just really weird in retrospect. And something that took me a few days to come to grips with just internally.
I know.
How fucked up it was. And you're even older than me, so I can only imagine. but this, you know, and I've seen some people ask, well, they're doing a Warrior tribute on Raw for Savage. They only did a slate and a video. But, you know, I think it's a big difference. I think one is that, you know, Savage wasn't with the company at the time when he passed. Warrior had just come back. It would look pretty crass. I also think if they had done a Savage tribute night on Raw, it would have, I think they actually would have gotten blasted for it, because I think it would have come across as very opportunistic and like a money grab, because he had not been on, and all of a sudden they're going to cash in on a Raw with him. So on the surface, it seems like they're still dicking Savage over and favoring Warrior, but I really think it was a few things. I think, one, he just wasn't associated with the company at that point, and two, I think it would have looked like a major, major cash grab. And things change. I mean, you know, it's been 2 years. Or 3 years, so God, it's been two or three. Three, huh?
3 years.
Jesus.
Yeah, it was, that episode was May of 2011.
Yeah, that was still my old job, because I remember where I was. But that was a it was a shock at the time, and I think those are three reasons right there why we're getting a Warrior tribute. And it's not even like a full war, you know. Some people thought we were gonna get a full Warrior show, but you can't really do that, because they already had sold the arena and they have stuff going on. So they're doing it throughout the night. They're dispersing in videos and packages and stuff.
I was gonna say, at first I thought I was gonna get an easy Raw recap tonight.
Which, no, definitely.
Here's this match. Here's this match. Here's this match.
Well, I thought about that, but what are they gonna do? And then we're gonna cancel the event live.
No, I mean, and we're too close to. I mean,
well, even beyond business
wise. We're right. Too close. Well, no, I mean, technically, we are kind of too close to Extreme Rules. They can't waste, they can't lose a night of storylines.
Yeah, I mean, they could. They have plenty of, to me, that's not an issue. They have plenty of medium to make it up. I mean, they could SmackDown, they get their own fucking network. You know what I mean? They
that is true.
They could make main events and recap what they're going to do in 3 hours, probably in 1 hour of main event. So,
That is true.
I think it really has more to do with the arena and all that. Like, I mean, what are they going to honestly do? Just and now the network, too, takes away a lot of that need, because they can do stuff like they're doing. I mean, there's another Warrior special tomorrow coming
on. Actually, I don't know if you've read. It's a four-parter.
Yes.
It's a four-part series. They're going to do every Tuesday night for the next 4 weeks. I don't know if it's before or after live main event. Is main event still going to be live? Or was that only through Mania?
No, I thought it was supposed to be through Mania, but now I read. I know they've still been doing it as of last week. So
yeah.
I'm not sure, you know, if they're going to keep it up or not. But
okay. But if it is still live, I think. What is it, 8 o'clock? I think every Tuesday night at 9 on the network for the next 4 weeks, they're going to do a four-part series, because apparently they follow them around in New Orleans.
Right, yep.
That week. I think that's going to be very, very interesting.
And they had WrestleMania 6 again last night in tribute to him. And, I mean, that's one of the great things about the network. I mean, you know, sad, very sad that Warrior died, but it's cool that they have this forum now to pay tribute to a guy and not have to try and, you know, use it for Raw or anything like that. And, you know, when they already have arenas booked and tickets sold and everything else. Now they have a network platform that, yeah, they can dedicate a whole night to him and still honor him and pay tribute. And, you know, a lot of that is very, very good. And we've seen a lot of positives with the network, and that's one of the cool things. And I was glad to see them switch up the programming last Tuesday. And
they did. Yep.
Wednesday night, rather.
Wednesday night.
I was glad to see them, you know, adjust on the fly. And it's the stuff they should be doing. So they have a big enough vault, and we can talk more about the network at a later date. But
yeah.
So we wanted to pay tribute and kind of honor the Warrior's career here tonight. We're not going to really get into much about what we don't know. I'm not going to sit here and read his Wikipedia page to you. There's plenty of outlets for that. So, Scott, let's just talk about our memories of Warrior, matches we've seen, promos, angles, storylines. So tell me, because you were introduced to him before I was, what was your first memory of seeing Ultimate Warrior on WWF television?
Well, but even before that, JR, I remember seeing him on World Class Television as the Dingo Warrior. I did see him, because that's when, in 1986, 87, that's when I was watching World Class on ESPN. So I do remember actually seeing Dingo Warrior on World Class, and he had like short, dark hair. He looked really weird. And I thought, oh, this is kind of cool, because I always thought that World Class guys were kind of boring, and I was not a big Von Erich guy at the time, so I actually more liked the Freebirds. But I'm like, wow, this guy's kind of cool, and the face paint, and good shape, and that's kind of neat. Didn't think much of it, because I was obviously a bigger WWF fan, and I only got to see World Class. I think it was only like twice a week or something, so I didn't see him that much. And then I remember seeing him. I was a freshman in high school, because it was late 87. So I remember seeing him on like Superstars and you know, primetime house shows, and I'm like, wow, this this guy's pretty crazy. My buddy Tom, my best friend at the time, Tom, jumped on immediately. When we were friends, when we first met, first became friends in the mid-80s, he was a big junkyard dog guy. But, you know, obviously by 87, junkyard dog had become pretty fat and useless. So my buddy Tom was trying to find a new – he liked Hogan, but he wasn't a huge Hogan guy. And the minute he saw Ultimate Warrior, that was it. Warrior was his guy. His bachelor party 20 years later had the Warrior logo on the T-shirts, and he was a huge Warrior fan. And I kind of gravitated towards him. I was still drinking the orange Kool-Aid, but I liked Warrior. I thought he was a fun change of pace. I think at the time, late 87, early 88, WWF needed to kind of freshen up the baby faces, because at the time, other than the Hogan-Andre feud, there wasn't that electric baby face. You had Jake.
We had Savage on the costume.
And you had Savage, who, but see, Savage and Jake were slowly getting there. And they were still kind of acting as pseudo-tweeners, but by the mid to late 87, they'd become baby faces. But they needed like an electric guy with fast entrance and a lot of colors and everything. Somebody really snazz up television. And that's the perfect timing was for the Ultimate Warrior, because he ran in the ring and he had the strings on his biceps, and he had the face paint and the bright tights, and he was shaking there. It was a perfect guy, really, for that moment, because I think the babyface side at the time needed to kind of be a little refreshed. You had like Bigelow and you had these big lumbering guys, and you had Jake, who was a very subdued babyface, and Savage was loved whether he's a face or a heel, so he was one of those guys that didn't matter either way. I think Warrior was a perfect guy at that time in 87 into 88 that really kind of freshened up the roster, and I think he was the first guy next to after Hogan that really made it very kid, even more kid friendly. We were getting out of like the older crowds of the early mid 80s and started getting very kid friendly. And I think Warrior was the real, after Hogan, the real first next baby face that really the fans gravitated to. And I think it was because of the big entrance and the colors. And he fit perfectly for what Vince's vision was at that time.
Yeah. You know? I started watching it very late 89, early 90. Mm-hmm. Wasn't really paying attention too much around the Rumble time, so I didn't see that. But my first real memory of him is I watched the main event in February 90, which he fought Bravo, right? And Earthquake came out, and Hogan made the save. Was that that show? The Buster Douglas night.
Let me confirm.
All right, if you can look that up. So that was yes. My first real memory of him. And then, I didn't see Six Live. I started shortly after, but I definitely bought into Warrior because I knew of Hulk Hogan and I liked Hulk Hogan, but Warrior was kind of the man when I first really started watching throughout that whole summer of 90. And, I was into the Rude feud and into the LOD and Demolition stuff. I didn't know better at the time. It seemed really cool. So I was definitely a Warrior fan. I really enjoyed his charisma. And, it seemed to me, someone who didn't know any better, I didn't know that he wasn't a long-time guy in the level of Hogan. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
So, good.
You are correct. It was the February 23rd, 1990, courtesy of Graham Cawthon, the history of WWE.com. February 23rd, 1990, Joe Louis Arena, WWF Intercontinental Champion, the Ultimate Warrior, pinned Dino Bravo at 4:11 with the press slam and splash.
Okay. And then Quake came out and Hogan came out.
With Earthquake then dropping Warrior, then threw Bravo to the floor. Earthquake then dropped two elbow drops on Warrior, setting him for a splash. Hulk Hogan then ran out between Warrior and Earthquake, then punching Earthquake off the top rope. Warrior took exception to Hogan's interference and shoved the referee out of the way, with Hogan doing the same.
Yep.
Moments later, the two went nose-to-nose, they pull him apart.
Yeah, so that was my first real memory of the two of them. And like I said, as a kid coming in at that point, I didn't really know that Warrior wasn't a guy that was like Hogan. I didn't realize he was the upper-comer superstar. Like, to me, they were 1A and 1B. That's what they seemed like to me. That's how they were positioned.
Well,
and
yep, that was their point.
Was a champion. And,
yep.
Well, they did it. For anyone who started watching right then, probably felt the same, but... So that whole summer of 90, he was definitely the guy. I cried when Hogan went out and they played that video with Earthquake and everything else. But and I was happy when Hogan came back at SummerSlam, but I definitely was into the Warrior Rude feud as well. Mm-hmm. And then going back and kind of rewatching a lot of his stuff. So into 91, and I remember sitting at Jim's house, Royal Rumble 91, first pay-per-view I ever saw live. We watched on his black box. Mm-hmm. And shock, complete shock when he lost to Sergeant Slaughter.
Oh, absolutely.
And Macho Man cost him the title and pissed. We just could not believe that Warrior lost. We thought for sure we were going to get Warrior Hogan at WrestleMania. And I remember that being a great match. It was a really good match, one that we talked about recently on our Rumble roundtables and everything. Mm-hmm. What are your memories of that show? Is that one you watched live?
Rumble 91, I did watch live. Yes, I did not watch WrestleMania 7 live. I did watch the, and I was floored. I thought they were going to reverse because remember they did that whole pause,
right.
And Jesse and at the not Jesse, Gorilla at the time was making you believe, they're going to reverse it. Was it Gorilla? It was Gorilla and Piper.
Yeah.
And they were going to reverse it. Don't worry about it. Everything's fine. And then they announced it, and then you faint.
Well, especially with all the Desert Storm stuff going on, and Warrior was kind of played up as a. He was defending the red, white, and blue tights and paint on and everything. So, I guess the signs were there. He had the weird, creepy, porn interview with Sherry earlier in the night.
Yes, the seduction. Yes.
Great match. And that led into his feud with Savage that had been revitalized. Remember, Warrior beat Savage on Superstars or something in December. Didn't he beat him clean or whatever?
I will get back to you on that. Let's see.
It was really weird timing. Mm. It was the Ascent. Well, I know they went to a DQ on Saturday's main event, but I swear they fought on Superstars too.
You think late 90?
I think it was late 90. Because Savage was out for a while. Remember, he was out from October through December. And I thought they fought on Superstars. I know there was a Saturday's main event. I'm pretty sure they had a match at the end of the year.
Okay.
Man, I'm misremembering this. Or it could have been early 91. Late 90, early 91.
Okay, I gotta click all the way. Keep going. Keep talking. Okay, when I get down to the end of 1990.
Okay. So anyway, that led into his match with Savage at 7, the career-ending match. And one thing I really remember about that was the build-up when Warrior destroyed Brother Love, the set, and beat the shit out of him and ran him off TV. And I remember actually being kind of sad because I really liked Brother Love. But that was a really memorable moment. That was right before WrestleMania 7. And they ended up showing the highlights at 7. And then, of course, the match with Savage. What more needs to be said? We've talked about it a lot. We've gushed about it.
Did you say Superstars?
I thought it was Superstars.
Hmm.
Check early 91.
Yeah, that might be. I think it's 91. Superstars, 1991. Okay.
I don't know.
See.
Maybe not.
Yeah. Well, no. The problem is, as I typed, I'll type Ultimate, because I type Warrior, and I keep getting the Road Warriors.
Oh, well, so. I did Savage. I don't see it, so I don't know what I was thinking of. I could have swore they fought. I thought they had, a fucking cage match or something. What the hell am I thinking of?
Oh, I know what you're thinking of. It was the night after, it was the Monday after the Rumble at the Garden. They fought in a cage.
I thought it was on TV.
It was. Well, not national TV, but I remember being on. That, no, it was on MSG. I'll find you the date on that. It was the night after. It was like the Where is it? Macon, Georgia. Oh, this is Superstars.
Yeah, it wasn't a Saturday's main event from October through April. Well, I don't remember this at all. The April 91, they had Warrior defeated Slaughter by DQ. I don't remember they had a rematch.
Let me go to... the one I remember is... Here it is. January 21st, 1991. It's 2 days after the Rumble. And Savage beat Warrior in a cage.
No, I thought Warrior beat Savage on TV. I don't know what I'm thinking of.
But that's the cage match I'm thinking of. That was a Monday night. I remember watching, my brother and I were watching MSG. And that was one of the few nights I didn't watch Superstars, primetime. And yeah, it was two days after the Rumble, because that was back when the Rumble was on a Saturday. And the main event at the Garden was Savage and Warrior in a cage, and Savage beat him. The Nasty Boys actually helped Savage win. That's kind of weird.
February 91... No, I guess Warrior fought DiBiase in the main event at 90. The end of 90. Jeez. I don't know what the heck I was thinking of. I could have swore they fought on TV, but I guess not.
Mm. Oh, well, he fought Savage all over house shows, though.
No, I don't know why I wouldn't have known about a house show then.
Because it's... Were any of these taped? How about this one? You wouldn't have been watching this early. Oh, no, wait. I'm thinking 91. Duh. Well, Superstars taping, January 7th, 1991 at the Von Braun Center. Ultimate Warrior pin... Oh, that's Slaughter. Never mind.
Well, Warrior pinned Savage in Providence. I didn't go to that show, though. That was December 26, 90, so maybe I heard about it.
January 12th, Wells Fargo Arena in Tempe. Warrior beat Savage by countout.
No, right here. Wrestling Challenge.
What's the date?
It was a Wrestling Challenge taping. Ultimate Warrior pinned Randy Savage at the 10-minute mark. December 12, 90, it was taped, but I don't know if it aired. Hang on. I don't know where the hell I would have seen it.
They had a few cages. Let me tell you, they went on the cage match circuit in late January.
Unless it was on fucking PWI or some shit, I saw it.
Hmm. Yeah, that whole week after the Rumble, they were fighting in cages for the whole week right after that show at the Garden, which was the 21st and the 25th in Valparaiso. They fought in a cage, Cedar Rapids in a cage. They fought two cages in a day. They fought a matinee in Cedar Rapids and a night one in Des Moines. Two cage matches. That's nuts. Not that they, you know, it wasn't like a Tully, Tully Magnum TA bloodbath, but still, though, I mean, it smacked around in a cage. And then the next day, a matinee in Omaha in a cage. It's fucking insane. Then he beat him on the, well, here's a taping. Beat him on the January 28th main event. Oh, no, this is the main event 5. I don't think he's on the show. No, I think it's just Hogan's on the show.
He fought Slaughter, yeah.
Yeah. But he was fighting Savage a lot in January, so they were pumping it up already.
The only thing I can think of was that I must have read it in, like, PWI or something. Either that or I was thinking of the Providence match. I don't know why I had visions of having seen it.
Holy shit. They did cages, like, all over the place. Oh, and then Savage must have got hurt because then Slaughter took over the cage match circuit. So Hogan, I mean, Jesus, Warrior fought, like, 15 cage matches in, like, 4 weeks. It's ridiculous.
So, anyway.
I mean, again, we're not talking, you know, bloodbaths, but still, though, I mean, remember those cages, those were those thick bars. I mean, I'm sure they weren't comfortable, regardless of, you know, like the level of match. But
so we go into he retires Savage at Mania 7. Then he works the summer. He does the stuff with Undertaker, gets locked in the casket. Do you have any memories of that? I mean, I was pretty tormented as a kid.
Oh, I was crazy. Oh, that was
out
nuts.
Of the casket.
Oh, yeah. When he's lying in the casket and the whole thing's ripped, and then he's, you know, he's fighting in the, he's in that, the snake, the cobra, whatever that pit or whatever that thing was, that weird glass, that cavern or whatever.
Right.
That was kind of crazy. That was nuts. I was kind of bummed because I like Jake, but my brother actually was telling me, he's like, you know what, give him time. Because my brother actually, he had a buddy who had like one of those big satellite dishes, like the front yard ones. So, you know, the ones that were massive. So he used to go over to his house and watch Georgia Championship Wrestling. So he remembers Jake as a heel further back than I remember. Mm-hmm. And he's like, oh, no, you'll love this heel turn. And I'm like, I don't like, I like Warrior. You know, I don't like this. I like Jake. I like both of them. But I remember when he bugged, my buddy was so upset when Warrior, and we're not going to get into the politics of that. There's no need for that tonight. That story's told a million times. But I remember very upset when Warrior left. My buddy, because he wasn't the biggest Hogan guy. And
well, I was really shocked because I remember thinking, well, why did he retire Savage? Why not just leave if he wanted to leave? Like, that was well, why did he ruin Savage's life? Why didn't he just leave if he wanted to go? So yeah, it was pretty shocking, especially, I mean, that SummerSlam match we've talked about on the podcast, but it's such a, I mean, you know, pretty much a joke. I mean, Slaughter, Adnan, and Mustafa had nothing. No heat heading into that match, and it was a glorified squash.
Oh, listen to this. I remember this. I was at this house show. New Haven Coliseum, February 11th, 1991. WWF World Champion Sergeant Slaughter beat the Ultimate Warrior in a cage match. After the bout, Warrior was double-teamed inside the cage by Slaughter and the Nasty Boys when a fan jumped over the guardrail, climbed into the cage, and jumped on knobs, and was pulled away by police. I knew that kid. He was a grade above me. I totally forgot about that. It was fucking ridiculous. I think that was like one of those, I think it was a Saturday matinee show, because we used to do those at the Coliseum all the time. That's $6 to sit in the good seats. God, I miss house shows. Yeah, I remember that. You ever have a situation on a side note? Were you ever at a show where like a fan got like all crazy?
Well, the special needs guy at King of the Ring 97. Now the closest I remember is Owen Hart getting hit with a hamburger at the WrestleMania Revenge Tour, but I never saw anyone pay for that one.
Really hit with a hamburger?
But yeah, that was, it was weird to see him go. And that build to that match was nothing special. It was a real foregone conclusion. The only question was if Sid was going to turn. That was pretty much it on that show. So Warrior leaves, comes back, shows back up at WrestleMania 8 as a huge surprise. And I remember a couple nights, I might have to listen to our WrestleMania 8 vault way back when, but, I remember it was a huge surprise that Warrior came back, and a couple of nights before, I actually had a dream that he was supposed to fight Smash at that event, and then he came out. I was like flipping out because Warrior came out, and I was like, "Wait, I had a dream he was going to come out." And of course, he had the short hair, and that prompted the whole Warrior's dead, and this is a new Warrior thing. And remember, they had the Ico Pro ad in WWF Magazine where he had no paint on, and he was lifting, and it looked more like Kerry Von Erich than him. And
oh yeah, he was. Oh yeah,
it was really. Tons of rumors going around. And even before that, there were rumors like a 90, 91. I remember talking to Jim, and in, you know, people at school about how there had been a second warrior. That was always the long-term rumor, that the original warrior died and they replaced him with a second one. And but yeah, so he comes back at 8, goes through the summer, does the Papa Shango feud, of course, with the vomiting and the voodoo. Anything, any memories of that one?
Oh God, it was terrible. Absolutely terrible. We got to go back a moment though, because my buddy Brady, who was another wrestling fan, he's different from my friend Tom. He loved Hogan, but I never saw a guy, and he still talks about it to me. He goes, we talk, you know, a few times a year, and I say to him, I said, what is still your favorite moment that end of WrestleMania 8? He goes, yeah, I don't think any run in has ever been as cool since. And I mean, obviously there have been a lot, but people, that moment is still one of the biggest markouts ever. And that, just because nobody saw it coming. See, that's where no internet was great back then, because you're like, because that had to have been leaked at some point if this was today. And nobody saw it coming. Nobody. And he run. I mean, of course, the end of the WrestleMania 8's a shit show, but that was just so cool, you know? And everybody, people still talk about it. Yeah, I remember when the Ultimate Warrior ran out at the end of WrestleMania 8. It was so nuts, you know? That was like one of the first legit holy shits.
Right. And they played his music, you know? And I was like, what? You know,
yeah. It was and Gorilla's pretending like he doesn't know what it is. What's that music? Come on, Gorilla. Oh, that's stupid.
Yeah, that was a pretty crazy crazy moment there.
And my friend Tom was bugging out. He was marking out like crazy. It was great.
So he went through the summer, did the Shango feud, and then re-upped his Savage feud. That build to SummerSlam 92 is very weird. Like, all of a sudden the matches were all announced, and it was nothing that had been building to anything. You know, it's just like, oh, it's July. Hey, Warriors fighting Savage. Oh, okay. Like, where did that come from? Yeah. So they had that match, and it, you know, they did all the Flair Perfect drama building up to that. Great, great storyline. Where Flair and Perfect were playing both men against each other. The promos each week were very good between Warrior and Savage. And that was a really fun match. I don't think it's better than Mania, but it's definitely up there. A really good match. A very stiff match. Remember some of those pile drivers and other shots?
It was crazy. Yeah,
they really beat the shit out of each other.
Yeah, definitely one of their better matches. Speaking of Warrior, turning back the clock a scoosh, Boston Garden, April 26th, 1992. Ultimate Warrior defeated Sid Justice via DQ. Sid's final appearance for 3 years. He stormed out of the arena and was suspended.
Yep.
So it was that day. So Papa Shango clearly was a hastened substitute for Sid Justice. I don't know if that would have been a great. So here's a little fantasy booking. If Sid stuck around, would it have been Sid Warrior and a Savage Flair rematch at SummerSlam?
No, because I think those would have burnt out over the summer.
Yeah.
Because the Sid Warrior thing was starting right away. Because I have I think it's a prime time on tape. It's like 2 weeks after 8, I think. And he does the interview, and he brings the kids up on the fucking podium and everything. And he talks about Sid. I'm sorry, he did that one, but then Sid came out and did a promo on that tape I have, and he shits on the Warrior. And that was his last, I think, one of his last appearances. So I think that would have bubbled up, and I think it would have fizzled by the summer. I can't imagine that would have made it all the way to SummerSlam. They probably just would have been the house show feud.
Yeah, I mean, what the hell would have happened? I don't know. I don't know what would have happened then if, I don't know what SummerSlam. Maybe they still would have done Savage Warrior. And then, of course, at that match, JR, there was always rumors that the original plan was for Savage to turn heel and win the title at SummerSlam. Be in cahoots with Flair and Perfect, and I don't know if that would have worked. Could you see a heel Warrior? I don't know.
No, maybe eventually. Well, I think he could have done it. It depended how crazy they went with it. Like, if he was still running and doing the ropes and all that, no. But if they had him do a ponytail and be reserved, like, maybe. I think they were a little too ahead of the curve in 92 with that. Like, a few years later. Like, if he did it like 96 into 97, they could have maybe pulled it off.
But
92 would have been kind of weird to see him do it. But I think that's how they would have had to do it. It's like you put his hair in a ponytail, no paint, and he comes out with flair as like a businessman all of a sudden, you know. Maybe it's a short-term thing. Maybe he does it for a few months and then snaps and goes back to Warrior and they do him and Flair at 9 or something. They could have done that.
Interesting.
So him and Savage then team up. They feuded with the Nasty Boys a little bit and then Money Inc. And they were supposed to fight Warrior Flair and Razor at Survivor Series, and Warrior goes AWOL again the week before Survivor Series, disappears, and pretty much vanished from the scene from then. I think he did a couple of indie things and whatnot, but he was pretty much, I think, out of the limelight for 4 years. I mean, pretty much forgotten for 3.5 years. And do you remember hearing much about him during that stretch?
I know that he... he opened up this the wrestling school, the Warrior University. I mean, it says here that he wrestled in Massachusetts for Kowalski. I don't remember any of that.
Oh, against Hercules. Imagine that match in December 92.
Oh, God. In 1993, he played the role of the swordsman in the action movie Firepower. Do not remember that.
And we'll get to the WCW stuff in a minute. Of course, we should get back to why he left. He ended up walking. You know, they said he was released. It's been disputed reasons. But, you know, in that book that came out, The Sex, Lies, and Headlocks, Chemist nailed Warrior for steroid use in September. He was able to successfully persuade McMahon, who was under federal scrutiny at the time, to release him from the company. So, you know, that's when a lot of the big guys left. Warlord and Bulldog, you know, all the guys that allegedly got the shipments of steroids to their house and everything.
Right.
Were booted. So, in March 95, WCW brings out the Renegade. Remember, they teased that Warrior and Savage were going to have the ultimate weapon. And it was obviously teased very heavily to be the Warrior. And then you get the knockoff and the Renegade, who basically had the same exact look and music and was supposed to be Warrior Light. I remember reading in PWI about his return in July 95 to fight Honky in Vegas. I do remember reading about that in the rags. Still completely out of the, pretty much off the mainstream radar. And then I remember in January 96, I was watching Raw. And Raw starts and Vince is running down the show and goes, "And what about the Ultimate Warrior?" And I was like, "What?" I like called Jim, like, of course, no texting or anything. So I called Jim immediately. I'm like, "Did Vince just say the Ultimate Warrior? What the fuck is going on?" And sure enough, they would announce that Warrior was coming back at WrestleMania. And they did like weeks and weeks and weeks of vignettes. And of course, why don't you tell us about what happened at WrestleMania 12, Scott, when he made his return?
Thanks. At WrestleMania 12, he made his big return to the World Wrestling Federation in his little singlet. And of course, somebody had to be the useless heel sacrificial lamb for a big win. So in came nothing mid-card heel Hunter Hearst Helmsley, and Warrior beat him in like 43 seconds or something like that. I mean, at the time, he wasn't I wasn't as my liking for Triple H was not as strong at this point. But it was, I kind of felt bad for him, poor bastard. You know, had to take a beating. But you didn't think that Warrior could have been like in a bigger, high profile thing. I mean, I don't know. Seemed like here's this. I'm sure he wasn't coming cheap, and Vince was not making a lot of money.
Oh no, definitely not. I mean, that was,
you know,
if you remember even the Todd Pettengill at the Slammies when he did that song in the beginning. The whole line was something about Warrior. He goes, "And how much did it cost McMahon?" Remember that? That was the line.
Yeah. Yes.
So I doubt it was cheap. I think you're right. I think they were looking hard for a name guy. And they needed someone. But I remember just being really excited to see him back. And if you remember, the rumors even pushed on commentary. Jerry Lawler kept saying, "I heard he's bald and 400 pounds and all this stuff." And then he came back out looking just like the Warrior of old. Squashed Hunter Hearst Helmsley. Mm. Came back out and talked about his big return. And then had the feud with Goldust, where they did the creepy stuff. And he said, "Shit and ass." Remember that? It was like out of nowhere. Like, Warrior on Raw swearing was so surreal at the time.
It was so weird.
He's like, "I don't give a shit, you know, me kicking your ass from beginning to end."
He had the ball cap on. And it was really, this is so weird.
And Goldust did the, he tried doing the Greco-Roman knuckle lock, and Warrior twisted his hands and said that, "I don't give a shit. Whatever you're into, I don't give a shit. I got a movie for you, me kicking your ass from beginning to end." And so that feud went from there. They had that awful, awful debacle at In Your House 7, Good Friends, Better Enemies.
Terrible.
Goldust couldn't wrestle because of his knee, and Warrior ended up beating up his bodyguard, the Future Balls Mahoney. A nothing match there. Not much going on other than that up until King of the Ring. Lost in the qualifiers. Him and Vader got a double count out. I'm sorry, him and Goldust got a double count out. Mm-hmm. And giving Vader a bye to the semis. Warrior defeated Jerry Lawler, King of the Ring, in another weird match. And that was the feud, I think, too, where the baseball cap is the most remembered. Because Lawler had done a painting of Warrior and then smashed it over Warrior's head, but he wanted to wear the baseball hat because he didn't want to get glass in his head or whatever. Yeah, he had that weird, weird baseball cap on. And it was during this whole stretch where he really was getting into the Destru City and the Warrior University. Remember, they had all the promos on the TV, and that was part of his deal to come back, that Vince had to push the university.
Push the school,
And Destru City and all that crap. So, and then Warrior's final show on the July 8th Raw is when he defeated Owen by DQ because Vader and Bulldog interfered. But he had already been terminated because he missed house shows. Allegedly it's because he was grieving the death of his father, but Vince claimed Warrior had not seen his father in 10 years and didn't even care for him, so he didn't take his excuse at face value. Warrior disputed that, and that led to their dismissal once again. Warrior was replaced by Sid in Your House International Incident and was gone again. This time,
now, as much as we love Warrior, that did lead to the incredibly awesome
Psycho Sid.
Yeah,
but yeah, it was sad. It was like anytime this guy came back and we got excited again, then he was gone.
Yeah,
so I was like, oh, back, gone again. Of course, then you have the WCW. But Scott, why don't we take a break?
Yep,
we'll come back. We'll do the back end of his career and then wrap things up.
Okay. Because
promotional consideration paid for by the following.
What's up, everybody? This is Kevin Kelly from Ring of Honor Wrestling. Make sure you check out The Kevin Kelly Show each and every week, placetobenation.com. We'll be talking about wrestling in the past and wrestling today, plus be talking about all kinds of sports and pop culture, whatever's on your mind, too. We'll answer your questions each and every week. The Kevin Kelly Show, right here, placetobenation.com.
What's that? Chad, do you hate it when commercials one and run?
What do you mean, Parv?
Oh, never mind.
Listen to Where the Big Boys Play on placetobenation.com and find us on iTunes. We are the only WCW Supercard exclusive podcast.
Hey, this is Rob Naylor. Do you still enjoy pro wrestling? Believe it or not, I still do. So you better join myself and Will on the Google Wrestling Podcast exclusively at placetobenation.com.
Shit, I wasn't ready. Hey, this is Will. If you like listening and shit. Hey, this is Will. If you like listening to guys talk about old school wrestling, follow me and Charles on Wrestling with the Past podcast on Place to Be Nation.
So you got the script, yeah? You all got it?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, this sounds terrible. The Titans of Wrestling... Oh, brilliant. Sorry. The Titans of Wrestling are...
Pete, I'm a lead analyst for the show and breakdown matches.
Kelly, lead historian. I'm a jobber lover. Are you?
Johnny and I drink.
And yes, me, Pop. We watch old school wrestling and love it.
Titans of Wrestling. You know you want to hear it.
What's going on? This is the Godfather, Nate Milton, with an offer you cannot refuse. Each and every week you can join Marcus Vandenberg, Big Nasty Alfred Kunawa, and myself on the Kings of Sport podcast, available exclusively on placetobenation.com, your one-stop spot for the best in sports and pop culture.
Hey, this is Ben Morse from Marvel.com as well as the Brad and Chad Show, and I've got a new podcast. Well, I'm part of a new podcast, Place to Be Nation's Main Event. Hosted by Scott Criscolo every other week, it's a roundtable discussion with myself, Andrew Reich, Steve Willey, Jordan Duncan, and an assortment of special guests as we talk wrestling today, the big questions, and our feelings. Please, please, please check this podcast out, because if the ratings go down, I know I'm the first head on the chopping block for Justin Rosero. See you guys every other week on Place to Be Nation's Main Event.
I'm Scott Criscolo, and your new home for sports is Place to Be Nation's Extra Point. Join me and the doctor, George Urbelino, for your sports hookup, whether it's NFL, Major League Baseball, NBA, colleges, or the Cowboys MMA Blitz.
Forget about it. Plus, join me for my prescription where I will solve all the world's sports problems with my own brand of medicine.
That's Place to Be Nation's Extra Point, here on PlaceToBeNation.com.
In Rhode Island and looking for great food and a fun atmosphere, we'll be sure to stop by Bonehead's Wing Bar, 131 Washington Street in West Warwick, with over 65 different wing sauces and dozens of sandwiches, burgers, and appetizers. In a fully stocked bar, Bonehead's has something for everyone. Bonehead's also shows every WWE and UFC pay-per-view, features live music, weekly trivia, and much, much more. So be sure to stop in, tell Matt and the crew that Place to Be Nation sent you, and become a Bonehead today.
Looking for new wrestling, sports, and pop culture voices? Head over to PlaceToBeNation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world. We have an extremely talented staff that covers comics, video games, and all facets of entertainment. Our sports coverage spans all the major professional and collegiate sports, including MMA. Our fresh takes on professional wrestling are some of the best on the internet. Don't forget to check out our fantastic podcasts as well, including the voice of Ring of Honor, Kevin Kelly, exclusively at PlaceToBeNation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world. Also, be sure to check out our friends at thehistoryofwwe.com, prowrestlingonly.com, Scott Keith blog at rspwfaq.net, and piledriverwrestling.net.
All right, Nation, we're back looking at the career of the Ultimate Warrior. Quick little sidebar here, placetomination.com, a lot of stuff going on, still a lot of WrestleMania fallout, and also a lot of comic stuff over the last few days. We had Russell Sellers with his March short box. We had Tim Capel with part one and part two so far of his philosophy of the Shield, the case for Captain America, if he is, pretty much is he the best superhero, right? House of Horror, looking at Tremors 2, Aftershocks. Jeremy Nichols did that, and he actually got a retweet from the guys that made Tremors, so that was kind of cool. Today, we did a podcast we had with Brad, Ben Morse, Greg Phillips, and Andrew Reich. They were all in New Orleans, not Brad, but the other three, and so they gave a full review, and it's a really entertaining listen. Greg and had some really good stories about Kaiju Big Battle, and Ben talked about his interviews with WWE stars, you know, through Marvel, and his interactions there, so, and Reich talks about, of course, being from the area, and everything about it. So a lot of cool stuff there. It's a good, easy listen. Speaking of podcasts, we had a comics podcast. Greg, Nick Duke, Russell Sellers, Todd Weber, Tim all got around, talked about TV shows, comic TV shows. So we could talk about Arrow and different stuff like that. A really good listen for you comics fans. Nate, we had his Impact recap and preview of TNA. Kings of Sport did their WrestleMania recap. Marcus was in New Orleans. They talk about the Warrior as well. You had all your other reviews, all your other recaps. Steven Sutton's Honor Report is in there as well. All those pieces for you as usual. The High Spot this week looked at the Ultimate Warrior 2 and also the debut or the announcement of Global Force Wrestling. That's Jeff Jarrett's new promotion. I'm sure you guys will probably touch on that on the main event this week, Scott.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Cowboy Goes to Class Part 3, wrapping up the Mega Power story storyline. So Roger Morissette, of course, long time, was a wrestling fan as a very young kid and hasn't really watched much other than, you know, a year or two in the Attitude Era. So really going into all this stuff completely fresh and new. And he watched the whole unfolding of the Mega Powers angle. He started by watching Savage DiBiase at WrestleMania 4, watched Mega Powers Mega Bucks at SummerSlam 88. That was part one. Part two, he watched the main event of Survivor Series 88 and the 1989 Rumble.
Mm-hmm.
And then in part three, he watched Mega Powers versus the Twin Towers from Saturday Night's main event, or from the main event. The main event, right? February 89. Of course, that is where Savage turned, and then he watched the main event of WrestleMania 5, the Mega Powers Exploding. So his whole look at that whole storyline is out there for you, and we have some topical stuff coming this week as well, which should be good. Yes. Scott Keith's NXT rant is up as well, plus Stephen Graham's debut of the Pro Wrestling Super Show. Had on Will and Charles and Pete from Titans of Wrestling, and they talked about WrestleMania 30, Raw, and that's going to be a regular podcast here on PlaceToBeNation.com, the Stephen Graham Wrestling Super Show. And, of course, his Grammys remix, 1995, was up as well. And it's got, of course, our episode of WrestleMania X8, episode 304 at the Place 2 podcast. So tons of WrestleMania 30 coverage for you. And a few more things trickling in along the way. We're going to have a piece ranking the matches of the Undertaker streak, all 22 matches. So that should be a lot of fun coming up in the next few days here. Of course, Wednesday night, we have a new episode of the main event and the Kevin Kelly Show. Steve Carino will be joining us on episode 7 of Kevin Kelly. We have a major announcement, Scott.
Oh.
PlaceToBeNation.com, something big coming. So we'll announce that on the Kevin Show Wednesday night. And, of course, who do we got in the main event this week, the Core Four?
The Core Four will be back, yes. Ben Morse, Andrew Reich, Jordan Duncan, and Steve Willey. And Reich and Morse will talk about their kind of expound a little bit on their weekend in New Orleans. And we'll talk about the show. We'll talk about the Ultimate Warrior. And we'll talk about this Jeff Jarrett thing, which I was just reading today. And it's so bizarre. So it'll be a fun main event. So
Of course, we have episode 4 of The Extra Point coming this week as well. So
yes. Yep.
You can check that out, too. So, all right. There's your PlaceToBeNation.com update. So diving back into the Warrior's career, we last left off, of course. He had left the WWF in 1996, kind of disappeared for a while. Signed back up in WCW in 1998. They gave him some creative control. And he formed a storyline where he made his own stable against a new world order called One Warrior Nation, OWN. Of course, NWO backwards, and where Oprah Winfrey would get her idea for her network, if I remember correctly.
Yes.
Warrior kidnapped and converted the disciple, otherwise known as Brutus Beefcake. He had instances of magic smoke knocking out NWO members, if you remember that.
Yes.
Entered through trap doors, and they had the awful, awful thing where Hogan was looking in a mirror, and he could see Warrior, and we could see Warrior in the mirror, looking back at him in the reflection. But Eric Bischoff, standing next to Hogan, couldn't. So it was very stupid, of course,
yes,
that we could see Warrior. I mean, they should have done it the other way around, right? They should have done it like British Bulldog and the Warlord in RSV, you know?
Exactly.
But, so exactly. we... you know, we could all see Warrior, which made the whole thing really stupid, that Bischoff is the only human being not able to see him in the mirror. But, of course, that trap door would be infamous for nearly paralyzing Davey Boy Smith when he awkwardly fell on it at Fall Brawl 98. And Scott really, I mean, in a way, almost kind of led to his downfall. And
pretty much.
He was already a pill addict anyway. But
yeah,
things did not get better for him after that. His back was really fucked up following that, yeah. And he got hooked on painkillers bad. So only four matches in WCW, Scott. Let me know if you remember any of them. So his first was at War Games at Fall Brawl. He was on Team WCW, competed against eight other wrestlers for a shot against Goldberg's WCW World Heavyweight title. DDP ended up winning that match. Do you remember anything about that War Games?
Absolutely not. I didn't
remember. I don't either. I mean,
I didn't even know he was in a War Games match.
Right. So it was him. It was three teams of three. So it was Team WCW was DDP, Piper, and Warrior. Mm-hmm. Team NWO Hollywood was Hogan, Brett, and Stevie Ray. And Team Wolfpack was Kevin Nash, Sting, and Lex Luger. So actually a pretty star-studded match.
Yeah, it was pretty loaded.
Stevie Ray, eight of the nine were pretty big names. Mm-hmm. Went about 20 minutes, and Paige got the win, pinned Stevie Ray to earn that match at Halloween Havoc. So Warrior did not win that match. The next night, he faced Jim the Anvil Neidhart on Nitro. kind of an odd match there. Later on Nitro, he teamed with Sting to defeat Hogan and Bret Hart by DQ. He had very little participation, tagged in for a short exchange with Hart. Kind of interesting, right? They never had really met up before in the past. So
no, not at all.
Kind of cool. Another match I really don't remember anything about.
No. They didn't mention anything about like their old... Did they even mention that him and Sting were former partners? Or I don't even remember them even mentioning it.
I don't remember, honestly.
I don't either.
It was a weird time for me in WCW because I was just starting college, and I was still getting into the whole, you know, trying to find time to watch Raw, you know, first 2 months of college and not knowing to watch it and everything else. So luckily, Russell was hot and I was okay. But so I can't say I paid a ton of attention to Nitro at this point, so I'm not sure how in-depth they went with Warrior and Sting's relationship. But, of course, his last match was his match at Halloween Havoc with Hulk Hogan. Eric Bischoff considered it to be one of the worst pay-per-view main events of ever.
It was absolutely terrible.
Timing was awful. You know, we had the awful arm injury. Warrior had gut it. War Games really slowed things down. Hogan tried to do a fireball and it backfired, and he had all kinds of issues. The fire went up in his own face. And Horace came out and hit Warrior in the back, and Hogan got his win back from WrestleMania 6, which is, of course, the most important part in the world to him.
Yes.
Again. WCW claimed there were attempts made to save the storyline, but Warrior claimed the only reason he was ever there was so Hogan could get his win back, and it's hard to, you know, deny that, I'm sure.
No,
made his last appearance on November 9th, rescued the Disciple during an attack from the NWO, and he ended up retiring later that year. So a very forgettable WCW. Well, forgettable on one hand in that it went nowhere, but memorable on the other that we got this real wrestle crap shit show of two months. I mean, what a disaster. I mean, I will say this. The first, when he first showed up and had the confrontation with Hogan, was pretty cool.
It was wild.
The smoke came out, and you really thought you'd see it again. You know, these two back at it, and you kind of get lost in the moment thinking, oh, well, if they recreate their ultimate challenge and everything. And then it just was swiftly downhill from there with the smoke and the trap doors and the, you know, mirror tricks and everything else. But and then Havoc,
I don't see anybody.
Havoc's just terrible. And it went long, and the pay-per-view, remember, some of the dish companies ended up cutting off the main event because that match went long.
Well, that's what happened. They didn't extend the window because that match went longer than expected, and the DDP-Goldberg title match went to bars.
Right. So a mess. Yeah. A mess all around.
Terrible.
So Warrior retired at that point. We didn't hear from him again until for 10 years. I mean, he popped up in the news and, of course, had some of his infamous rants and ravings on the internet and a different speaking things, and we're not gonna
he got throttled at UConn.
We won't get into all that.
No.
So then his only match was in 2008. He fought Orlando Jordan in Barcelona, Spain. A Warrior won the match and new Wrestling Evolution heavyweight title, but then immediately vacated and retired again. That is a match that Jim ordered. I can't, that was 08. Christ, that was 6 years ago. That seems like just yesterday. Jim was telling me he ordered this pay-per-view match. I watched it on the internet, and the thing crashed. Well, they sold it. It was an internet-only pay-per-view, and it was like this one match. It was like $30 or something. And
Revolution. I don't even
Evolution. He ordered it, and he said it was like the match wasn't that great. Like it was cool for him because he's such a Warrior mark, and seeing him do all the stuff. But probably a waste, a big waste of $30. But let me see if I can find what the details on the pay-per-view were.
Well, you're doing that.
Right here. Ultimate Warrior. I'm sorry. Oh. I found it right away. Ultimate Warrior's return can be... This is from WrestleZone. Ultimate Warrior has issued the following press release that fans will be able to watch his match exclusively online pay-per-view event. UltimateWarriorTV.com partners with Daily Motion. I'll return to our Daily Motion Top 50 website. Ultimate Warrior is the most unique, intense wrestler. On June 25th, fans will finally get what they've been demanding. After a 10-year absence, Warrior and his trademark face paint, tassels, and rope shaking will be back in the ring. In a unique twist, he'll be facing NWE champion Orlando Jordan. He recently had an altercation with Jordan in Madrid, where he was accepting a career award. An angry Jordan heckled and shoved a young fan, and Warrior came to the rescue. A sold-out Return of the Ultimate Warrior will take place in Barcelona, Spain. It will not be televised. Strict regulations set forth by... This sounds like our buddy from the NWF wrote this fucking bullshit. Daily Motion will be hosting the Ultimate Return and featuring promotional content on Daily Motion's site, created by Warrior himself. It didn't have the cost here, but I'm pretty sure it was $30. So, there you go.
So it was a whole card, obviously. It wasn't just this match.
I think just that match aired.
So you paid $30. So Jim spent $30 to watch one match?
Yeah, because I couldn't believe he did it. But
what a lunatic.
He didn't care.
Well, this is Jim.
Well, this is a guy who you got away with years for not paying for pay-per-view, so I guess.
Yeah, that's true.
It was a payback, but yeah.
All right. So we didn't see him on WWF TV, except for the DVD that came out in, when did that come out? 2009?
No.
Earlier than that, right?
I think it was before that.
2007, maybe? Let me check. Let's see what Graham has on the history of WWE.com. Let's go to DVD. Let's see. DVD.
Right here. Oh, yeah. September 27th, 05.
Wow. Really?
Yep.
Wow, that far back.
Self-destruct. I remember, I thought it was right after I moved home. I remember it was one of the first DVDs I got and watched.
Yeah, I never got that one. I think I borrowed yours. Yeah.
So, of course, they buried him. The self-destructive Ultimate Warrior. Warrior ended up suing. Said that they were basically making money off of him, and they ended up liable and all that other stuff because he had guys just shitting on him completely on this DVD. And it was harsh. It was a real bad cut-up job.
Yeah, they were pretty mean.
You know, we'll get to 05 at some point, probably in our vaults, but that was a very mean-spirited time, late 05. Like, that's when they thought they had to get back to being, like, attitude and nasty. They went back to USA, and I thought they thought they had to get back to the whole, you know, being... shitheads. That's when Vince did the JR stuff with the Dr. Heine
and yeah,
and then this. So it just seemed like a very angry time. Like
I feel like they were that way for like most of the summer into the fall, and then Eddie died,
right,
and then
they changed.
They went back to not being assholes anymore.
they were real douchebags in late 05.
Yeah, they were real.
And that's when the UFC stuff was starting, and they tried to get Mike Goldberg, and UFC was against them, and all that shit. It was just a weird time.
That's right, because then Taboo Tuesday 05 is when Joey debuted. That's right. I forgot about that when they were going for Mike Goldberg. Yeah. All right, so he that July and then July 15th of last year, he was featured in a in the 2K14 game trailer,
right,
and revealed he was in the roster as a pre-order bonus. So at that time, JR, a lot of us were like, "Wow, you need permission for that."
Right, right.
Interesting.
Well, and rumors started coming out that Triple H was recruiting him. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't really a surprise when it was announced that he would be inducted to the Hall of Fame. And Scott, I'll read his speech right here. So he went in the Hall of Fame. The speech was great, of course. We covered a lot of this last week, so we don't need to go into it again. But here's his speech from Raw. No WWE talent becomes a legend on their own. Every man's heart one day beats its final beat. His lungs breathe their final breath. And if what that man did in his life makes the blood pulse through the body of others and makes them believe deeper in something larger than life, then his essence, his spirit, will be immortalized by the storytellers, by their loyalty, by the memory of those who honor him and make the running the man did live forever. You are the legend makers of the Ultimate Warrior. In the back, I see many potential legends, some of them with warrior spirits, and you will do the same for them. You will decide if they live with the passion and intensity. So much so that you will tell your stories and you will make them legends as well. I am Ultimate Warrior. You are Ultimate Warrior fans, and the spirit of Ultimate Warrior will run forever. And then he died less than a day later. Really fucked up.
Yeah.
Of course, he'd been married for just about 15 years.
Mm-hmm.
Had two daughters. Just shocking at the time. But Scott, let's go back. We've covered, you know, our memories of his career and a shorter career. But a very memorable one.
Mm-hmm.
So I got a couple questions for you. I want you to give me, we're going to do some favorites, and then I want to talk about legacies. So
okay.
What is your favorite Ultimate Warrior match?
Rude at SummerSlam 89. And number two, Warrior Savage 7. And then
I think it's unique because his
Warrior
best,
Hogan 6.
His best matches were all so great.
I know.
And the rest of his matches were eh.
You know, it's amazing. For a guy who everybody says had no work rate, when it came to when the lights shined the brightest, he delivered.
He did deliver.
In his own way.
He always delivered on the biggest stage, and his Mania matches were all very good. You know, the one with Rude at 5 is serviceable, but 6 and 7 were great.
Yep.
And SummerSlam 89 again with Rude is great, and SummerSlam 92 with Savage. So I'd say those four are really his most memorable and his best matches. What is your favorite storyline of his?
I have to say the Rude and the IC title, and I mean Haku was involved. And I remember one of the most memorable things I ever watched was when the Superstars the weekend before,
yes,
when Andre kind of when Hogan had I think Warrior just beaten Haku,
yep,
and Warrior was kind of backing up through the entranceway or whatever, and Andre just comes out of the darkness,
yeah,
and fucking just
him.
Grabs
him. He's choking out the Warrior,
headbutting him, and all that was awesome. Yeah. I think that whole build from 5 to SummerSlam 89 might be,
and even through Survivor Series, because they still feuded with Heenan and everything with Andre,
oh, yeah, the Heenan family,
all the, yeah, Jordan Duncan matches and everything else.
Yes, and well, the whole thing with Piper and, you know, and all that. Pretty much from Rumble 89 to Survivor Series 89, I think is my favorite 11 months of the Ultimate Warrior.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, the feud with Hogan was nice, but it was only, you know, what,
right,
7 weeks?
Well, I'd say my other favorite one's probably the Jake stuff, even though we didn't get the blow off.
Oh, the Jake stuff was
the summer 91 was a lot of fun with Taker and Jake and all that. So that'd probably be my other favorite storyline. So legacy wise, is he up there? I mean, obviously he's not on the Mount Rushmore because he just wasn't around long enough. But when we talk about guys, mainstream names, guys we know, you know, guys non-fans know, like, where does his legacy and his name recognition rank for you on that level? Like you have Hogan, you have Andre the Giant, you have Macho. Is he in that group?
Yes. I'll tell you why.
Jake the Snake, Million Dollar Man. I mean, he's in that grouping, right?
Yeah. If you ask any fan now, not fans like us at Place to Be Nation, not junkies, but fans who watched when they were kids and probably haven't watched since, you ask them, who are your favorite guys, or who are the guys you remember liking, watching and liking when you were a kid or when you watched it in the 80s, the Federation years? The Ultimate Warrior is always one of the first five names that come up. If that is the case, you are a legacy. Hogan always is first, obviously. But I think the names, even a little more than Andre, sadly, because, you know, by the time the real people were watching, you know, when the Federation era really kicked in 80, 89, Andre was not on as much, even though he was. But if you ask any guy, any fan, guy or girl, I mean, like I said, my next door neighbor has been a fan as long as I have. If you ask somebody who was watching as a kid during the Federation years, who were the wrestlers, the superstars you remember the most and enjoyed watching the most? Oh, ultimately, no pun intended, the first name is always Hogan. And that's fine. It should be. One of the next four is always Warrior. He's memorable.
Right.
He's a guy you'll never – he's a character and a superstar you never forget. And that's why his gimmick was great, like I said earlier. The bright face paint, the poofy hair, the tassels, the physique,
the,
you know,
insane promos,
the freaky promos, the tasseled boots, all that stuff is memorable. But so when anybody names, like, the fire off names of guys they remember when they were a kid during the Federation years, Hogan's always number one, unless you're my brother, and then it's usually somebody like, you know, DiBiase or a heel. Actually, in my opinion, one of the first two names that always come up are either Hogan, or if you're a Hogan hater, usually Savage, because most Hogan haters were Savage fans. After that, Warrior always comes up within the next two or three names. And to me, that's not a Mount Rushmore thing, but that's just that's a guy who will always be remembered during that Federation era window because he is one of the more memorable characters ever. He's unforgettable. And obviously what happened was very sad. And I think people now will be like, yeah, you know, I did remember. That was awesome. And this DVD that's out now, I think is going to be one of the best selling DVD Blu-rays I'll have over the next few years.
No, I'm sure. It may be one of the last, I mean, honestly, with the network and everything else.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, non-pay-per-views, they may still do some comps, but, yeah, I mean, it's, if he's one of the first names that come up whenever you ask an old school fan, who are your favorite guys, after either Hogan or Savage, who in my opinion are 1-2 in that Federation window.
Right.
I think Warrior is on that list, or that short list too.
Well, you got Andre. I think Andre's one of them.
Yeah, probably.
I think
probably.
Million Dollar Man, even if you don't know what he looked like, you've heard the name Million Dollar Man.
Right.
Jake the Snake. Like, that's one you've known. Mm-hmm. I think even Superfly. Like, if you said Superfly to someone, they'd probably know. Yeah. Yep. And the other one was, who the fuck was I going to say? I don't want the top of my head now. I forgot.
Boss Man? No.
No.
Well, for you, Joaquin.
Obviously. Don't tell.
Heart Foundation?
No. I don't think that's a...
Demolition?
Nope. I don't know who the hell it was. Anyway.
Bad News Brown? No. Could fire off the whole Federation roster. Duggan? No. God, no. Yeah, I agree with you.
Well, Hacksaw. I think Hacksaw, if you said to people, they actually...
Yeah,
that's
they
a name
do.
Would probably you know,
I think most people do
resonate.
Skin, but yeah, no, it's true. Duggan's a guy that's on there too. But I think the first like three or four names that come up in your head when you say who were the guys you remember from the Federation era, the four names are Hogan, Andre, Savage, Warrior. And then DiBiase, Rude, Perfect.
Beefcake.
Beefcake might be the second tier. But I think the top tier, if you go by fours, kind of like the NCAA tournament, four seeds, the first four guys whose names you always hear first, Hogan, Andre, Savage, Warrior.
Undertaker, that's the other one I was going to say.
Oh, Taker. Well, Taker, yeah. I mean, Taker was later on, 90, 91. But I mean like that Federation stretch,
right.
87.
But I'm just even talking 90. Mainstream people. Like, if you were to name,
right.
you know, outside of like Steve Austin and The Rock, maybe Triple H, like there's not too many guys from like 91-ish on that you can name that people would know.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, if I just went up to someone and say, oh, do you know who, I don't know, even like Shawn Michaels is. You know, I don't know if that resonates with people that aren't mm-hmm. wrestling fans. I think that grouping from the era of growing up, Undertaker, Steve Austin, Rock, maybe Triple H, and maybe John Cena. I don't even know that at this point. Are guys that you can go up to any non-fan and mention their name. And I think Warrior's clearly on that list, as we saw everywhere talking about it. News stations, you know, sports news, like everyone talked about it. So, yeah, just a very memorable guy. His star shone very bright and brief. And I don't know, part of me thinks part of the allure was that he wasn't always on that much, you know? He'd come in for short bursts and leave you kind of wanting more and then disappear for a long time. So
yeah, I know.
He wasn't really someone that was ever overexposed, to be honest. I mean, his longest run was what, from late 87 till summer 91? So, I mean, yeah. 4 years, that was pretty much his longest run in wrestling. Other than that, it was just months at a time. So any final thoughts and memories?
He's just a guy that will always be remembered. He may not have had the most work rate. He may have been a technical marvel. But his gimmick and his character will never be forgotten. Never. There aren't many guys. Like I said, my best friend Tom is the only person that I've ever heard say my favorite wrestler was the Ultimate Warrior. And I'm sure there are favorites out there. But he is part of that lexicon of the Federation era when you were a kid.
Yep.
Hogan, Andre, Savage, Warrior. Just because he's unforgettable. The running through, like I've said it over and over. Just the whole package is complete. And for you, JR, for a guy who... You know, for a kid, 10 years old, just started. He was pretty much the first, next to Hogan, obviously. He was pretty much the first guy you saw.
Yep.
Really?
Yeah, right? He was up there. Well, yeah, one of the first. You know? I mean, Beefcake was another guy I kind of knew off the bat. But yeah, Warrior was one of the first guys I was aware of.
Yeah. I think a lot of people feel that way about him. You know, and I think, only the diehards remember the shitty 98 WCW people like you and me and
right. No one's gonna know that.
No one, you know, the kid, the people who watch as kids don't remember him ever, even in 96 in WWF. So no, he's unforgettable. Is he the Mount Rushmore? Is he the Flair? And no, not at all. But he's definitely a guy that will always go down as one of the most unforgettable characters of the.
Well, you look
the
at it this way:
era.
Would wrestling have been different without him? Yes.
Yeah.
So to me, that's how you tell. If you got a guy that you can say no. You know, probably not.
Well,
storylines may have changed, but would the world of wrestling had been different if he had not come around? I would say yes.
Mm-hmm.
I think so.
Well,
I think it's a material change if he doesn't.
Would 67,000 people gone to the
right, yeah, exactly.
Sky Dome to watch Hogan and Zeus?
Maybe, but probably not.
Good God.
So, all right, Scott. I think we've hopefully done well here, paying tribute to the career of the Ultimate Warrior. You know, the late Ultimate Warrior. A very sad couple days last week, and. Sure, it'll be sad again this week when we start seeing the funeral pictures and all that stuff leak out.
Oof,
but,
I know.
All right, so we'll be back Wednesday separately. You're going to have Episode 7, like we mentioned, the main event, and Episode 7 of the Kevin Kelly Show with Steve Corino, with a major announcement coming there.
Can't wait.
So
can't
tune
wait.
In that to hear that. We'll be on next Monday. We're going to be doing the draft episode, finally, and we're going to review that March 25th 02 draft, as well as do our own. We're going to redraft how that should have went. So that should be a lot of fun. That was Stephen Sutton's idea. And then next Wednesday, Scott, we're going to do our all-time pay-per-view cards back at it for July and August.
Okay.
So, have we done May and June yet?
No.
I have this wrong. Here. We're going to do May and June.
Yeah, I noticed that earlier, too, and I thought it was a typo, too. But, yeah, so that means Judgment Days and King of the Rings and Bad Bloods and all that.
Yeah, we'll sort that mess out. So, and then the Monday after will be Backlash 02, and then, of course, KK Main Event that week after. So, there's the next few weeks here on the Nation Place to Be podcast. So, thank you, as always, for your support, placetobenation.com. Click through Amazon. If you're looking to buy some stuff, you can hit our link first and go on to Amazon and make your purchase. You can get us at Twitter, place2bnation, and on facebook.com/placetobenation as well. So for Scott, I'm Justin. We'll talk to you Wednesday night, main event, Kevin Kelly Show. Until then, take care.